Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And welcome to The Food Fight, where we offer a different perspective on food culture issues around Australia and the world.
We'll talk with chefs, producers, business owners and experts to hear their stories and find out what makes them tick.
Today is a COVID-free escapist episode where Simon and I talk about our favourite foods and how to prepare them. Enjoy. All right, welcome to another Small Bites segment of the Food Fight podcast. This is where me, Steph, and Simon
Hello.
talk a bit of shit, and we can answer some questions from the audience in future episodes. But we're just gonna have a bit of a chat. And what I wanted to talk about today,
extra content.
Simon is. We want to talk about our favorite stuff to eat and why. So, Simon, like, do you have, when people ask you, what's your favorite food?
Literally happens, like, so often that I've come up with a stock answer.
Okay.
Which is kind of true. Like, it is sort of, but it just sounds really good when I say it.
Okay. Tell me.
Rather than it being, like, really my favorite thing. Because people ask, like, if as chefs, you know, people are always like, what's your signature dish? What's your favorite thing to eat? Someone I know asked the other day, like, how many recipes do you know? Which, like, is that how we rate chefs now?
I don't think I know any recipes.
Well,
off by heart.
I'm just a natural, so.
Just cook from instinct, you know?
Yeah, it's instinct. But, so my stock answer is a perfectly roast chicken. Because it is something that people fuck up all the time. So when you do it, and it is quite easy to do properly, it just takes like time and effort,
yep,
which is basically what is good cooking. When you actually do a properly well-roasted and rested and carved chicken, people freak out like they've never tasted chicken before.
Really?
Yeah, people just like, because people fuck chicken all the time, because chicken can take a beating.
Yeah.
It can take a battering. Like, you can overcook it and you're still like, oh, it's still chicken. It still tastes all right.
Well, I think the difference between a well-raised chicken and just a little bird that you buy at Woolies for $10
that can also
is a huge
a
difference
point,
as well.
Yeah. Yeah, if you buy a good chicken and cook it even like badly, if you get a good chicken and a bad chicken, cook them both badly, the good chicken will still be better.
Give me some chicken facts. What makes poulet de bresse yellow?
So it's the grain that they're fed. So it's their diet,
right?
Which gives it that taste.
Do we just, like, because we don't have yellow chickens in Australia. You might find them in some places.
Sometimes grain fed chicken can be like artificially dyed to give it that yellow color. Cause a lot of time it's nothing to do with the feed, but like something like poulet de bresse has been, you know, selected over centuries, and it's probably fed on like a hectic diet of grain soaked in fuck knows what.
Yeah.
To kind of give it that color. So that's, you know, a very specialized product that's been, you know, developed over years and years and years of animal husbandry.
Mm. Okay.
But you do get, like, the most important is just get a good good free range chicken. Like, and the breeds of chicken they use for like mass farming are just badly designed. Well, they're all breast.
Yeah.
Fuck all leg. We even got some like ex-laying chicken. So it's a different breed from like meat-eating chicken.
Mm.
There's a farm that does it somewhere. I think Brendan Cato dropped them off for us actually, because he was using them. And pulled out the bag, and it literally looks like a different animal.
Yep.
It's like big legs, like big wings, breast is kind of sloped and small, and it literally does not look anything like or resemble a chicken you buy in the supermarket. That was quite shocking when I saw that.
Yeah, right.
I was like, fuck, that's something's gone wrong here. Right. But it was delicious. It had so much flavor.
Okay. Well, then. Okay. So, tell me. I want to know your techniques for cooking said chicken. Where would you source it in Wollongong? Like, or anywhere?
Even at Coles and Woolies, they do often, not always, have some like better quality chicken. Like Coles stock game farm chicken.
Okay.
Quite often, which we source a lot of our game from that company. They're really good, really good quality. So they're corn-fed chickens, and they're really delicious. If not, go to your butcher, see what he has.
Thirlmere Poultry, do you get chicken from there?
No, when we do ducks, we get ducks from Thirlmere.
Okay, right. But they do have chook.
Yeah, it's a bit of a funny one. It's actually like a kind of coalition of farms.
Oh, okay.
It's not kind of one small farm. It's a big kind of industry up there.
Mm.
So it's not quite the small farm I think people might associate with it occasionally.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you go to like a good butcher and ask if they can get you a good chicken, or if they have good chicken, they should hopefully have good whole chicken.
I know the guys at Buena Vista Farm down in Gerringong do chicken as well.
Yeah. So if you go to your farmers markets, it might be
Farmers markets, or you can definitely. I think you can order it from the Buena Vista website for like when they do slaughter like a batch of chickens and stuff. Cool. They put it out there to the people that. Or on their newsletter
you
and social
really
media.
You really can notice difference because it's something like everyone eats so often. You do just kind of get acclimatized to it being bland white meat.
Yeah.
And just being like a flavor soaker. So it's, you know, it's great in stir fries, it's great in curries, it's great in all this stuff because it just soaks up and it tastes of whatever you're cooking it in.
Yeah.
But like an actual good chicken has its own taste and its own flavor. And if you cook it properly.
For sure. I went to... Like and for that reason, kind of, I've kind of avoided ordering chicken at nice restaurants a lot of the time.
Yeah,
like I'll go for the fish, or I'll go for the shellfish, or the.
You eat it all the time.
Yeah, but when I went for dinner at Fred's for Maine, I had this deboned Maryland that they did in the wood oven, just with like a really simple sort of like tomato and fresh, like well not fresh, but a tomato and cannellini bean. Like sauce, it's just like some lemon and rosemary, and like, and the way that they did it in that wood fire oven with the crispy skin and like little burnt patches and just the flavor. I don't know where they got that chicken from, but the flavor of that chicken, it was seriously one of the most delicious things I've ever eaten.
Yeah,
it's
literally like
so good.
Chicken somehow managed to become like the thing people eat the most and the most underrated at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So. Tell me what you're doing with your bird to make it like awesome. What are the things that people do wrong, or what are the little tips and tricks to make it awesome?
A chicken's a shit shape because the legs cook a different type than the breast.
Yeah.
So you're kind of fucked from the start. So if you want to keep it whole, which is kind of nice, like realistically, to cook a chicken perfectly, take it all apart and cook it individually. But it is nice. I like the ceremony of taking a whole chicken out of the oven.
Yeah.
Best way is to start. Well, first thing I always do, if I'm going to make a fucking thing of it, like a Christmas, I brined it for about 5 hours and then left it out in the fridge overnight to dry out.
So why do you brine it?
So that basically, like, it seasons it from the inside. So the meat wants to become at, like, equilibrium with the salt mixture, the salt solution. So it takes in that salt liquid into the meat. It seasons it from the middle and makes it extra juicy.
Yep.
So that will stop it from drying out. And then... Leaving the whole bird out overnight will dry out the skin, which will help you get crispier skin, because by brining it, you're moistening the skin. You have to kind of counteract it.
Yep.
Don't do that at home because it's take you 2 days. Just leave the chicken out on a plate uncovered the night before, because that'll dry the skin out and that'll help you get real crispy skin.
Yep.
Like key number one. Don't salt it either, because that'll pull moisture out and that'll make it wet again and you open up a can of worms.
Right.
So let it dry out in the fridge. Get your oven real hot. Get a good old trivet of vegetables in the bottom of a pan. And cook the chicken for the first 15, 20 minutes. What would technically be upside down.
Hold on. So I don't know if we've skipped anything, but we've skipped stuff that I would normally do.
What would you do?
Do you truss it?
Nah. Because no. that tightens it up and it makes it cook unevenly.
Okay.
Trussing is just for show.
Right.
It's yeah, it doesn't help it cook because it's tight. That means those little areas in between the breast and the leg, which are notoriously hard to cook, they're all pushed together, so no heat's getting in there, and it takes longer to cook, and it will cook more unevenly.
And you're putting it into the oven without adding any oil or butter or fat to it, or
I'm making it real simple. Like you check some, but like you don't really have to. Like you can add seasoning after.
Right.
Like really, you just want to come out with a crispy, well cooked bird. Like, right. Oil up. Like I would do heaps of other stuff. I'd chuck a load of butter under the skin.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Season it with lemon myrtle and all this wanky shit.
Yeah, okay. We're talking about doing a bog standard, like, yeah, delicious just, like, roast chicken.
Say cook a really great roast chicken. So yeah,
you want to take it to room temp before you put in the oven?
No, I don't really worry about that.
Really?
Like again, it would help, and it would help you cook it a bit more evenly, but it just takes time.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
The one step I think would make the biggest difference is leaving in the fridge unwrapped overnight.
Yep, and having a good chook.
And then cooking it upside down. So breast side down for the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Because that means the heat can get to all those underneath bits, like the leg and the thighs, the oyster bits. They can actually get cooked. Cause it's really hard to get them nicely cooked when it's all just sitting on it and no heat is kind of circulating to it.
Yeah.
So I always cook it like that for like 20 minutes, get that a little bit brown, get that cooking, and then turn it back over breast side up, and then you're cooking it as normal.
Wow.
Then hopefully, when the skin is real nice and crispy and brown, you pull it out, you rest it for about half an hour, 20 minutes, half an hour, like good long time, let it kind of settle, let it soak up all its juices again.
Do you cover it in foil when you rest it?
Yeah, it's not the worst idea to do. What happens then is you get a lot of steam.
Yeah.
Trapped in there, and you end up with the skin getting
well. That's the trade-off. So how do you rest your chicken?
So just rest it, just leave it out.
And just
then,
leave it out.
Yeah, and then literally... Yeah, before you want to serve... The skin should stay pretty crispy for a while. But before you want to serve it, real hot oven, just pop it back in for 5 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
And then, like, you're not gonna reheat it in the middle after that.
Yep.
You're just going to have a nice crispy chicken.
Yep. Okay, awesome.
And then you should be done. Because otherwise, there's always that thing of, like, trying to stab the leg, and the leg's always just, like, soggy and maybe a little bit pink, and the breast's overcooked. So you just need to try and even it up. So turn it upside down like that. Just helps it even up the cooking time a little bit.
Makes sense. Mm. It's always like when you roast the chicken as well, it's like you've always got one like soggy white side and then one like nice crispy brown side.
Yeah,
like
exactly,
if you could kind of distribute that out throughout the whole chicken, it sort of makes a bit of sense.
Well, it's just because chicken's a stupid shape. Like I've done before where I've like roasted a chicken whole to where the breast's perfect, taking it out, letting it rest for 5 minutes, taking the legs off, put them back in the oven on a tray to finish cooking and then get that skin crispy.
Yep.
And then pulling them out.
Yep.
Which really is the kind of maybe the best way.
Yeah.
But it's just more effort.
What do you like to... This is so simple, Simon. I didn't expect it to be so simple. I thought it'd be like all these wanky little tricks and stuff.
Well, there seems to wanky tricks. Like you can add to it. Like when I did on Christmas, I did like all the wanky tricks in the book.
So what did you add? What's the wanky Christmas tricks?
So I brined it, like dried it overnight, and I stuffed it under the skin with lemon myrtle butter.
Yep.
Rubbed salt over it, stabbed a lemon a couple of times, stuck that in the cavity.
I've done that in the past. I feel like it's too lemony sometimes when there's lemon in the cavity.
Yeah, you can get some like real lemony flavors to it.
Yeah. I like now if I'm doing lemon in the cavity, I'll go like a wedge of lemon and some rosemary and that's it. Or something like that.
Chuck something up there.
Yeah.
And then I roasted it upside down at like 200, turned it over for like 25 minutes, turned it over, did it like 200 for 25 minutes, then I turned the oven right up and cooked it for another like 30 minutes, 40 minutes until it was done to finish again crispy.
Yep.
So it's like a heaps of little step. But that's why like this is kind of the quickest way to make it better at home. I think if you take all these little steps and you do take your time and you've got time and you do all these little things right and you season it well, you know, even you buy slightly better salt to season it.
Yep.
You know, do some nice cracked pepper. You make a little compound butter to sort of stuff under it. Take your herbs, take your lemon. You take all these little steps and you take a little time and care and you roast it properly and you kind of think about what you're doing and you think about how the heat distribution is happening and what's cooking and what's the best way to do about it. And you spend all that time over it and it comes out and it tastes really fucking good. And I think that is kind of the essence of cooking for me, is doing all those little extra parts and taking a little bit more time, a little bit more thought, and ending up with a much better product.
Yep.
And that's kind of why I think a really well-roasted chicken is like my favorite food.
Yeah. Awesome. That's such good tips. I think that like a lot of what you just said sort of translates into all cooking. It's just like use good produce and actually pay attention to your methodology. Like if you pay attention to detail, then you just end up with a better result. And start simple. Like if you don't think you can roast an awesome chicken, then don't go start digging into fucking Heston's perfect roast chicken where you've got to like it's like a 7-day process.
Yeah.
Like just follow Simon's perfect roast chicken and yeah, makes sense. All right, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna tell you what my favorite thing is. So my stock answer for what's my favorite thing to eat is Sydney rock oysters.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Shocker.
Yeah. Amazing. But I feel like there's a lot of, like when it comes to preparing oysters, let's just get into the minutiae of how I like to do it and see if you agree with me.
Yeah.
Firstly, like, and I guess this is like a cooking tips, small bite segment for people out there who, you know, like just want to hear some shit from us. But, you got to shuck them straight away. Like I don't ever buy oysters that are unshucked. You like have to do it yourself. Yeah. Like that's the first thing. And get the best oysters that you can find.
And it's pretty easy to shuck an oyster.
It is. It is.
It's not difficult. You can, with a little guide or a book or a video, you'll be able to do it safely and easily.
Decent little knife.
Yeah. Or get a proper shucker. Don't.
That's like, it.
Just don't use a knife or a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Or something fucking stupid.
So like a good oyster knife, and for people out there, like my favorite oyster knife that I have, and I've got a few, and I've bought like expensive ones and I bought cheap ones, is you get them from fishing shops. They're these little ones with a black handle and they've got quite a sharp tip.
Yeah.
And they just work really well for me. I really like them.
That's what we use at the restaurant.
Yeah.
They're literally the best ones.
Yeah.
Buy.
Like I've got a few different types and the ones with the black handles from the fishing shops are the bomb. So get some, and then a lot of the time, like if you're buying unshucked oysters, usually there'll be two or three grades, like ages on the oysters, depending on where you're getting them from. You might be able to get some that are like 3 years old. You might get some that are 2 years old. And then sometimes they call them like, okay, these are our bistro ones. These are our A grade ones or whatever. Like, if you want the best experience, which is what we're talking about, just get the best ones that they have. Get like the biggest, plumpest, oldest, ones that they have, and you'll pay a bit more for them. But generally buying them still in the shell, you pay a good price for them anyway. You know,
and so if you're buying them from a fishmonger or straight from an oyster farm, they'll be so much cheaper than what you'd pay for a dozen in a restaurant.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
you'd be to get like a shit ton for what you'd pay for a dozen. So
that's
you can basically afford to buy better ones.
Yeah. I bought I think it was 30 oysters. This is down in Bermagui. Something like 30 oysters something like 30 oysters for $40.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Dollar and a bit each.
Yeah. Which is amazing. And my favorites in terms of Sydney rocks that I've come across, I've had a lot, but I think two of my favorite ones are Shane Buckley's organic Wapango Lake oysters from down in Bermagui. I really like the Tathra oysters as well, and I really like the Clair de Lune oysters from Moonlight Flat in Bateman's Bay. They're probably my top three. I've had shitloads of oysters everywhere, and I always fucking love them. But if I can remember, you know, the ones that have really stood out to me, it's been those three farms. And then so when I shuck oysters, you definitely have to try to remember to remove any grit that might be left in your oyster after shucking it, which is it just makes sense, but it's usually just a matter of like running your finger down the sides and just removing any shell that gets in there.
People when they shuck oysters get a little bit scared of actually like touching the oyster.
Yeah.
As long as your hands are clean, it's fine.
Yeah.
You can touch the oyster. Like you can literally pull it out of the shell. Like sometimes you get some that are particularly gritty in the grits or through the liquid, so you're going to discard that liquid. If it's a fresh oyster, it's not going to make too much difference. As long as you actually like kind of clean the oyster shell out of any little residue or bits that are there, and then pop it back in.
Yeah.
Like, you can do that. That's fine.
Yep. And so I don't know if you'll crucify me for this, but I actually pour all the liquid out.
Well, so,
that's in the shell when you first shuck it. I pour all that liquid out because I think that. So this is, I'll tell you my methods, and you can tell me afterwards whether or not you agree with them.
I might fear your methods.
Yeah, you might. But I pour all that liquid out because I think that I've had experiences just over the years. I just think that sometimes you end up with what is more a mouthful of seawater than a mouthful of delicious oyster. Mm. But I know that some people are averse to some people like to serve oysters still on the muscle, like still with the adductor muscle attached, and then they serve it with an oyster fork and you detach it yourself, which gives you apparently like optimum freshness. Now, I mean, I'm detaching it from the adductor muscle like 10 minutes before I'm eating it anyway. So I actually turn my oysters because I think that they present better.
Yeah.
So I detach them from the muscle.
Otherwise, you can't really clean them and get any grit out.
Yeah.
If you don't turn them.
And so I turn them, and then my favorite way of serving them is on crushed ice. So you can serve them on rock salt. You can serve them on whatever, like fucking pebbles or other oyster shells or whatever. But I like to serve them on crushed ice because I think that like if you turn them and then get rid of the liquid, when you then put them on crushed ice, they bleed more liquid back into the shell, but that's the liquid that you kind of want to be eating, in my opinion. And then they chill down really, really quickly to like that beautiful like chilled oyster temperature.
So like, there's a limit. You don't want to, like, sometimes you get an oyster and it is full to the brim.
Yeah,
you don't want that.
You don't want too much liquid in there.
What do you want, like, you know, the right amount, even if it's a little bit of kind of seawater.
Yeah,
a little bit, that's nice. You don't want to kind of let it dry out too much. So yeah, it's pouring out a lot of that. And like I said, like a lot of time you'll have a little bit of grit in that liquid, and that will come out with that as well.
Yeah, my favorite condiments. So there's some people out there that are very much no condiment people. Mm. There's people out there that are just lemon people. There's people out there that are open to heaps of different condiments.
Some people out there cook them.
You can cook them. But my favorite condiment is just the classic mignonette, and I go like a fucking eighth of a turn of finely ground black pepper.
An eighth?
Just the tiniest little
An
turn.
Eighth of the tiniest turn you can imagine.
Yeah, just the tiny little dust.
Just like, how many specks are we talking?
We're talking like 47 specks of pepper.
Per oyster?
They're small specks. They're pretty small specks.
47 per oyster?
Fucking, I don't know. I just made the number up.
Seems like a lot of specks. I'm like, you know, if I'm going to start getting my apprentice to count them out.
Yeah.
Portion them up before service.
So do you basically follow the same methodologies I do in serving oysters at the restaurant?
Yeah, we serve them in little fancy wooden bowls filled with rocks.
Right. But do you find they're cold enough? Do you chill?
So ours come out of the...
You put the rocks in the fridge?
Ours come out of the service fridge. And then I shuck them, put them on this, and they go straight out to the restaurant.
Yeah, okay.
So
they're cold.
Yeah, they're cold. We do actually store our oysters in the wine fridge at 14 degrees, though.
Yep.
So guys from Appalachian Oysters have been doing some tests and studies recently, and they found that they keep for like a stupid amount of time longer. And we found the same thing. They keep fresh and of quality for like twice as long as they would in a fridge that's down at like 2-3 degrees.
Yeah. Well, I always store like just at home. I never put oysters in the fridge. I store them on the laundry floor, on the tiles, like in a wet hessian bag, or like even in like just put them on a wet piece of newspaper, like in some wet newspaper.
Or something. Keeping the fridge, kind of, you think it makes sense, but it's not the temp. They're still alive, and it's not the temperature they would be living at.
Mm.
It's too cold for them, so you're basically killing them at that temperature.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense when you think about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. You should get a special service. Whereas like I'd want to get like a specialized wine fridge for my house with different temperatures in it. you'd want to get a specialized oyster fridge.
Yeah.
Where you can like zone in on each temperature. Be like, so I got my Tarthras at 14 degrees and then my Clair de Lunes are at 16.
Yeah, as recommended.
A little bit, it does have a little tartar texture, so I like to keep the temperature down a little bit. Oyster sommelier.
All right. Well, should we talk about some other things that we like to eat?
Let's talk about Macca's.
Macca's, really? I don't eat Macca's anymore. I'm done with Macca's.
None at all.
Maybe once a year, I reckon.
I just think people who act like they don't like Macca's are just like, it's like people who drink coffee without. Some people drink coffee without milk. They look down.
I don't
else.
Not like it. I just no,
people, people
don't
drink coffee
eat
without
it.
Sugar. Like, just look down on other people.
Yeah.
You think that?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, do you have sugar in your coffee? And you're like, yeah. And they're like, oh.
Well, do you know, like, do you know who else has sugar in their coffee?
Who?
Like 12-year-olds who drink Mocha's. So if you want to be in with them, then that's okay.
See, but, exactly.
I'm happy to be an adult.
Coffee snobbery. coffee snobbery around everywhere. Oh, you have milk with yours, do you? Mm. Yeah, just...
No, there's no shame in having milk in your coffee.
Oh, right. Shame in having a little bit of
Mate,
sugar.
The World Barista Championships, you've got to make a cappuccino, you know. A cup of chino.
Apparently cappuccino is like a thing. I saw it.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I saw an argument about it in like hospitality made me hate people. Apparently like RSLs, like people order a cup of chino.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is a real
thing.
An
espresso.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Double shot espresso.
Cup of chino,
please.
Hilarious. So do you actually want to talk about Macca's? Or
no,
we just...
that was more of a joke.
Okay. Yeah. if we're going back to Macca's, I just remember one of my mates used to order a Big Mac with chicken patties instead of beef patties. And like, it was actually really good. I remember having it one time.
You can get that there sometimes.
You basically
now.
Do whatever. Like,
well, yeah,
you can
yeah,
just
they
make
they
whatever
do
you
want
now.
Want.
Yeah.
It's just fucking a bit of a nightmare for the staff there. But anyway.
Oh, well, let them have it.
Yeah.
What else, Simon? What else is on your in your faves list?
I really like a big lamb fan. I just don't eat a lot of lamb anymore.
Mm.
We don't really have it in the restaurant too much, so I don't really eat too much of it.
Yeah, okay. How did you... Like, if... Let's talk about... Like, I mean, it's beautiful. Like, I mean, we can easily say we'd love a fucking lamb shoulder, like, because everyone does, roasted. But, like, if it was, like, the type of lamb dish, if you had like, a less, you know, native-focused restaurant, but, like, how would you like to sort of serve lamb as a really good expression of of a good piece of lamb?
For, like, slow-cooked, like, braised lamb, neck is a great cut.
Mm.
Really nice, meaty pieces, but still real gelatinous. And then for a cut you can serve pink. The rump is just bloody good eating.
Yeah.
We've had it on the restaurant before. It's one of those cuts, it does have a lot of, like, it has a cross section, has a lot of fat, a lot of connective tissue. And then obviously in between that has some amazing, beautiful texture, pink, tasty kind of meat to it.
Yep.
Every time we put it on the restaurant, someone always has to fucking spoil it for everyone and just complain about, like, oh, it's really fatty.
Yeah,
and it's
right.
Like, or it's like, oh, it's chewy. And it's like, well, not all meat is supposed to be like a fillet steak.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why people have a problem with chewing.
Yeah.
There's a real issue with chewing with some people.
I've got a...
It tasted delicious. It was a bit tough.
Yeah. I've got a lamb rump story, like a Kitchen Nightmares style lamb rump story. It used to be on at a restaurant that I was working at. And unfortunately for this customer, the lamb had bot fly.
What?
So it, like, it's this type of fly that lays eggs underneath into the muscle of animals.
And she got,
and this one just slipped through the cracks, right? So, like, you obviously don't cut into a piece of meat while you're preparing it unless you're slicing it or whatever. So we cooked this piece of lamb, and like it was. I think we sous-vide it first and then just finished it and served it. And this person cut into their lamb rump and there was a pocket of maggots inside the meat.
Wow.
Like in the muscle.
That cooked maggots. Sous-vide maggots.
Like, about the worst you can get, like, as a chef.
Like,
sort of thing.
Yeah. That's like nightmares for everyone.
Fucking luckily, I actually knew the customers and they were legends. But do you know what was the worst one of the worst things about it? The person that was on their table didn't take, like, we gave them a free dessert, but the person that was on their table didn't take that lamb dish off their bill. Like it was obviously an accident or just like, you know, just like a new staff member or something like that. So they got to the end of it and they were like, yeah, like, sorry, do we still have to pay for
I know you gave us a free dessert for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, there's your non-sequitur with related sort of lamb kitchen nightmare.
Yeah, when something like that fucks up, it's like 99% of the time, like, you'll just do another little fuck up. Because you're worrying about every other thing that table might do and everything might say, and then, like, yeah, you just forget to take off the bill. And for one last time that night, you look like a dickhead.
Exactly. It's like, okay, now we're definitely not coming back here. Yeah. Yeah. Not only are these guys idiots and they let maggot lamb come onto the menu, but they're also charging
it. They tried to charge for it as well.
Yeah.
They gave us a free dessert, though.
So,
big fan of lamb rump.
Lamb rump.
Yeah.
Okay, beautiful.
But again, you kind of have to go to your butcher and get a good quality lamb rump.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you get hold of saltbush lamb.
It's
excellent quality.
The best lamb, probably some of the best lamb that I've come across
from Wales.
It's from Wales.
Steph, you're right.
It's from Wales. What's the breed that they use in Wales?
Well, there's actually a lot,
or a bunch.
So there's quite a few different breeds. There's one that's kind of like a native breed called Bolwyn lambs, which are actually a small breed of lamb.
Right.
Super tasty, really great fat content.
Okay.
Something you see in the UK more is more emphasis on the breed of the animal, and there's a lot more information freely given, which you don't see in Australia quite so much. Even like cows, like there's less availability of different breeds of cow, but it's just something you see on people's menus more. People will, like, name check the breed of cow rather than just being like, you know, Wagyu, Angus.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
So you can see something like Dexter, which is a I think it's a native English breed.
Yep.
Which is pretty delicious.
Yep. And then, so, like, what would you say the difference, like, between Welsh? Does it have a lot to do with sort of the breed, like the types of grass they feed on and things like that too?
Yeah, it's the fact that we shouldn't really have lambs in this country. Like, we don't have good grass. Until recently, there's been no grass.
Yeah.
So in Wales, it's fucking rains all the time, so there's always the greenest, you know, grass full of nutrients, full of everything they need. They also like live in quite hilly sort of hillsides as well, so they have to, you know, they're moving around a lot, they exercise a bit more, so there's a bit more flavor and texture to the lamb. And just good, you know, good history and good standards of it. In Australia, like, there's just nothing for them to really eat, like, so they have to be almost artificially eating with, you know, other things.
Yep.
And it just produces not as good meat, really. Mm-hmm. Like,
fair enough.
That's the end of the day of it. It's
cool.
Like, lambs didn't come from here.
He's biased, ladies and gentlemen. He's biased towards Welsh lamb.
Definitely. But
there's also definitely some good lamb grown in Australia.
There's some good, no, good lamb joking. To have.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like we have to force it to be good.
Yeah, that's kind of true. Right?
Yeah, I'm biased towards Welsh lamb. I'm also
biased towards New Zealand
native Australian meats.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
You know,
I've definitely you talked about salt bush lamb. Another fantastic lamb is the Flinders Island salt grass lamb.
Yeah, it's same thing, different name.
Which is No, it's not.
What do you mean?
Salt bush is salt.
It's the same concept. They eat salty.
Yes,
bush lamb. Because in Wales we have salt marsh lamb.
Well, like, the thing about the salt grass is that because Flinders Island is such an exposed piece of land, like, it's the sea breeze is settling on the grass,
and that's
what they eat. Whereas, like, you can get saltbush lamb from, Cowra that browse on actual saltbush.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a different way of injecting salt into the meat.
In Wales, we have where the marshes come in, where the estuaries, so the land basically gets flooded for 6 months of the year.
Yeah. Well, that's and the same. That's the same on Flinders Island.
Yeah, right. Too. Somewhere more similar. And then when the tide goes out, then they raise the the lambs on there, so they eat these naturally salt tolerant plants.
Yeah, I think on Flinders Island they brew out. I don't know. I might be completely wrong. So please, if you know out there, you can correct me by finding us and getting in contact with us. But I think they browse on Samphire and shit like that too.
Yeah, yeah. Like, forward, yeah.
Yeah. And then also I want to shout out to when we're talking about lamb, I always talk about Vince Heffernan, who has Moreland's Biodynamic Lamb in Dalton, which is outside of Goulburn in New South Wales. And he raises Texel lamb out there, which is like a bit of a not traditionally a meat breed, but it's just fucking great. Like, it's just amazing. And his farm, if you follow it's Heffernan Vince on Instagram. He talks a lot about, you know, his practices for building his farm, but it's a completely biodynamic farm. He's planted, himself and his wife have planted thousands and thousands and thousands into the tens of thousands of native trees and vegetation to create an ecosystem there where they don't have to drench their animals, because there's enough like wasps and you know, animals in the ecosystem to eat any of the bugs that threaten them. It's just beautiful. They've completely repaired their river systems and stuff there, and have just created this beautiful ecosystem. And their attention to soil quality and not overgrazing is just amazing. It's just so beautiful, such a beautiful place. And Vince is just such a thoughtful farmer and cares so much about the land that he lives on and that he farms on. You can go back to like one of the old Capital Cookbook episodes of this podcast if you go back through the archive and listen to me chatting to Vince about what he does out there. But that's a really, really cool product as well.
Good plug.
Yeah, yeah. On you, Vince.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, I was trying to think of some other stuff that I really like to eat.
Kind of, this question always gets into, like, do you start talking about dishes or ingredients?
Yeah.
Or, like, so I'm like, well, the thing I eat most of is probably, like, rice. Like, I eat, like, heaps of rice dishes.
Where do it's,
like,
you?
Curry or fried rice or, like...
Stir fry.
Yeah, whatever it is. I eat a lot of, like, paella, like, even, like, chili con carne. Like, I eat a lot of rice-based dishes. So, like, realistically, like, rice would be one of my favorite things to eat.
Rice.
But it's, you know, it's so, like...
But that's just the... And, like, I mean, we can get into... We can have a chat to whoever about, like, different varieties of rice and stuff like that. Yeah. But
it's just, you kind of...
Depends on how you define what your favorite is, I guess.
Like, do you start picking meals? Or, like... And then it's like, you'd like, what's your favorite meal? And you'd be like, oh, well, it was the meal I had at Aria. Like...
Yeah.
You're like, or is it, you know, spag bol?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, which... What are we talking here?
Yeah. If we go down that path, fucking ossobuco has always been one of my favorite things to eat. Just sucking the marrow out of a ossobuco bone and ossobuco just having a really fucking fall apart.
What would you have your ossobuco with?
Pappardelle, I'd say.
With pasta?
Yeah. Or like I've done it with polenta with like a few times.
Yeah, soft polenta.
Yeah, soft polenta's fucking rad. I wouldn't eat it with rice and I wouldn't eat it with potato. Well, like I wouldn't prepare it at home with rice or potatoes.
You mashed potato.
I way prefer polenta or pasta.
Yeah, right.
And like I recently made one where I actually just like pulled apart the meat and made it into a ragu. It was a ossobuco ragu, and I mixed the bone marrow through that and shit as well, and it was fucking so delicious. Bit of gremolata.
I'm using gremolata a lot recently.
Found a gremolata.
Native gremolata.
Oh yeah.
Salt, sea parsley.
Beautiful. Should we leave it there, Simon?
Yeah, why not?
All right, no worries. We can get back into more stuff that we like to eat and cook, more cooking tips and shit like that later on. But this is just a way for us to fill some time and have a chat. Cool. Sweet. Thanks.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.